Good evening. Good evening. Welcome. Welcome. Wherever you are, whatever time it is, whether it's evening when you're listening to this or not. So today I just finished the last class of a course called The Path of Fearlessness. So this topic of fear has something that I've been thinking about. It's on my mind and on my heart a little bit, this how we work with fear, how we are with fear, how fear shows up. And of course there are different types of fear. One is due to imminent danger, that is seeing a rattlesnake while we're out for a walk, or a car that's veering over into our lane or something like that. So some real imminent danger, there's that type of a fear, like some bodily harm might happen soon. And then there's also, maybe I'll say, and I'm not talking about that so much. That's a natural response and is important and helps keep us alive. It's an appropriate response. But we also might have some fears that are less pressing, don't have a fear, not so much associated with some imminent danger. Maybe just a fear of public speaking is not so uncommon. Or fear of being seen a particular way, you know, not doing the right thing or something. And also so maybe I'll talk a little bit about that today, sorry. but also, we could distinguish between fear and anxiety. And there's a number of different ways in which we might make these distinctions, but one way is to say that fear has a clear object. I'm afraid of public speaking. And I feel this dryness in my mouth, or jitteriness in the body, or something like this. Maybe as a little aside, I'll say that there was a time in which I had this really increased heart rate, would be beating really fast. And before I really understood it, I just assumed that it meant that I was afraid. And so then I started making up all these things that I was afraid of. But then when that kind of got taken care of, I realized, I was misinterpreting this rapid heartbeat as that I was afraid. So there is fear that has this bodily experience. Most often our hearts don't beat quickly for no reason. But to distinguish between fear and anxiety, anxiety also can have an increased heart rate, but anxiety tends to not have any particular, I shouldn't say this, maybe it's a more diffuse, maybe it's not so clear what we're anxious about. Anxiety tends to be maybe a little bit more pervasive, or a little bit more touching different areas of our life. But maybe not. You know, maybe in some ways that those distinctions are artificial, but maybe it's an invitation for you to discover for yourself the relationship between fear and anxiety. And so I would like to talk a little bit about fear this evening, and some of the ways in which working with fear can be really beneficial, and not only because it's a difficult experience, and not only because I don't think anybody wants to feel afraid. So for the most part, it's something that we're trying to manage so that it'll go away. But there can be something really valuable about working with fear. In addition to learning how to be with difficult experiences, and in the guided meditation, I was suggesting that when we do look when we do gain capacity to be with difficult experiences, it really can be a great support for our life. And I would say fear in particular is something that can be a support for us. But I would say it really can be a support provided we're, it's not overwhelming. If it's overwhelming, then of course we need to take care of that. And one way to stop feeling overwhelmed is to feel the experience of fear in the body. Maybe it's rapid heartbeat. Maybe it's a dry mouth. Whatever it might be. And as best we can to allow the fear to be there. And in some ways, maybe even allow the fear to be okay to be there. As best we can, as best we can. And then if we can allow the fear to be there, maybe we can become curious about it. And learn a little bit, investigate it. Not so much that we have to figure everything out while we're in meditation. But at other times when we're off the cushion, perhaps, to get curious about it. So to help us explore fear, again, this is maybe not so much on meditation, during meditation, and not so much when we're feeling overwhelmed by it, but in other areas of our life, to help this exploration, I'd like to share a poem. And I'm just going to share the first part of this poem. This poem kind of unfolds as a short story. So the first part of this poem is called Hello, Fear. It's by Rosemary Traumer. And the first part of the poem goes like this. There I was, making tea in my kitchen when fear hit me like a school bus. I didn't need a scientist or a therapist to tell me it hurt. I screamed, ah! I shouted, no! But after smashing into me, fear just opened the folding glass door of the bus, yanked me on, then plopped me into a green vinyl seat. I love this. I think it's very evocative, this idea of, you know, fear is never invited, right? We never really want it. It just comes careening in. And I think it's this poet, she's choosing to use a school bus as kind of like the vehicle. I'd like to suggest that we might use examining, being curious about, investigating fear as a vehicle. And I'll unpack this a little bit as we go. But I think that the poet, Rosemary Traumer, we can think about a school bus. Maybe in some ways we were younger. We were children when we were on school buses. So there's a part of us that feels young and vulnerable when we feel fear. But also, buses carry a lot of people. So we don't know how many other people are on this bus, but maybe there's a whole lot of people when we get pulled onto this bus of fear, and maybe we don't notice them at the time because we're feeling fear. But might there be a way in which we can imagine, connect to this common humanity, that fear is something that humans experience? It's a good thing. It's helpful for us. It keeps us aware of the rattlesnakes and the car veering, drifting into our lane. But also to just, maybe there's some support in knowing that there's others, and maybe the others that can accompany us with our fears. And also I appreciate in this poem that the fear just arrives. The bus with fear on it arrives and they get yanked on. They open the door of the bus and we get yanked on. Sometimes we feel that way, right? When we have difficult experiences, we feel like whether we want to or not, like we get whisked away and off we go. So the poem continues. So she's on the bus, on the green vinyl seats. I'm laughing because that's my memory of school buses, also of green vinyl seats. I don't know if they still do, but. So the poem continues. "I'm scared," I said. "Yeah," Fear said, "'cause I'm scary." "Yeah," I squealed as the bus careened through the couch, through my bedroom, through the splintering dining room table. So in this poem, the school bus is carrying fear with our protagonist, the poet perhaps, or maybe ourselves, and going through all the areas of a person's life, the couch, the bedroom, the splintering dining room table. And in the same way, I'd like to suggest that working with fear can take us to many areas of our lives. Sure, we might experience fear in all areas of our lives, but I want to suggest that working with fear, being curious about it, investigating, learning how to be with it, can also touch so many different areas of our lives. In fact, maybe it provides a window. Working with fear provides a window into our inner life. Maybe some emotions that have been tucked away that we've been kind of afraid to feel. Or maybe if we work with fear, we start to notice some of the stories that we've created about who we think we are, or the purpose of our lives, or what we value. Because when we start to work with fear, we get a view of what are we trying to protect. Often fear arises when we feel threatened. So what are we trying to protect? So examining fear is a way in which we might gain some clarity about some of our inner life and what's important to us. And maybe some ways in which what we're really holding on to isn't so helpful. Working with fear also helps us to realize the way in which our fears might be limiting our freedom in ways that we didn't appreciate. We might not be aware of the role fear has until we are asked to really examine it. I know for me that I noticed for quite some time early in my meditation practice, there was an awful lot of planning going on. You know, I was just spending my time planning, you name it, I was planning it, what I was going to do next, and what I was going to eat next, and what I was going to get at the grocery store, you know, like all these things, the emails I was supposed to be sending, all this stuff, right? Maybe some of you can relate to this or recognize this. And it wasn't until that I really started to examine, I started to see, oh, there's fear underneath this planning. I'm trying to make myself be safe. I have this idea that as long as I just plan everything, I'll be safe. I see this showing up sometimes in my Dharma talks too, that I try to plan them. And then, you know, maybe I get a little too stiff then. But just the ways that we try to be plan or prepare or take care of, just because there's a little bit of fear there. Somehow just recognizing the fear makes it a little, I don't know, shifts our relationship. Just if we're aware with it, then maybe we're okay. I heard that earlier today. If we bring some awareness to what's happening, then there's some confidence that can be there. So working with fear can also reveal some of our underlying beliefs, some additional underlying beliefs. Maybe that we have these beliefs that were only validated through the eyes of others. So it's so important how others see us, and we're afraid that we won't be seen in a complimentary way. Or maybe we have the belief that it's dangerous to be strong and competent. So examining fear might highlight some of these things that otherwise maybe we wouldn't get illuminated, we wouldn't notice them. We might notice some of our patterns of reactivity. Oh yeah, I'm a little bit afraid when the refrigerator is running out of food. I feel like, you know, this sense of lack, and I won't have enough. Or I don't know. We all have our own things that we have some patterns of reactivity, or second arrows. We might notice, oh yeah, fear shows up here, or maybe anxiety shows up here. If we start to investigate fear, we also might notice how there's this vicious cycle of fear and clinging. And fear leads to clinging through identification, clinging to a sense of self, or clinging to wanting to have things that particular way. That's why we're planning, right? That things have to be a particular way so that we can feel safe. And then with this clinging through identification, and then with identification, this leads back to fear. As we observe the objects of our identification under threat, because of course they are changing. So whatever we're identifying with doesn't stay constant. It doesn't stay steady. It's not as predictable as we wish it were. So fear and clinging, just this vicious cycle. We know that clinging is a source of suffering, but maybe sometimes it's helpful to look at clinging like from the side view. And maybe one way is to look at fear. Again, not when we're feeling overwhelmed, and not when maybe in our meditation practice, maybe it's just enough to notice there's fear, but maybe outside of meditation to talk about it, think about it, journal about it, kind of get curious about the role fear has in our lives. Maybe I'll say some other areas of our life that working with fear might travel through is our relationship with death. This, of course, is a natural fear that humans have. But if we are looking at fear, we could look at our relationship to death. We are all going to die. We know this intellectually. All of us know this. But maybe we can start to reflect on death in a way that allows us to approach the dying process in a way that's sacred, in a way that's liberating. And perhaps when we examine our fears and we look at our fear of death, maybe we decide that we'd like to do some death contemplation practice, Maranasati practice. It's a highly esteemed, well-established practice in the Buddhist tradition of contemplating our death. Not in a morbid way, it turns out to be really beautiful and touching practice. I'm not going to talk about it here. Some of you are familiar with it. I'll say I know that Nikki Mercafori has taught some death contemplation practices. But allow us to kind of reclaim that part of ourselves that's afraid of death, and instead kind of experience the peace and ease of the wholeness that comes when we can no longer be afraid of the fear of death, of the fear of the fear. And also the peace and calmness that can come when we align ourselves with the truth of reality. We know things that have the nature to be born have the nature to die, but somehow it's part of the human experience that we don't really think about it. So that leads me to the next section of the poem. So here the poet or the protagonist is speaking to fear, and she says, "What if I lose everything?" I said to fear. "Yeah," said fear. "What if you do? And who will I be when everything changes?" "Yeah," said fear. who will you be? Then he opened the door and shoved me off the bus, and I was standing again beside the familiar green counter, teacup in hand, not a drop spilled. So the person finds herself at the beginning, right? She was making tea in the kitchen when this bus arrived. But working with fear can like build some self-confidence. I think once we realize that, yes, we can be with fear and we can examine our fears, then that we don't, maybe the fear of fear starts to diminish. We realize, oh yeah, okay, it's uncomfortable perhaps, but we can do this. We learn to like trust the practice, trust the awareness, trust having some curiosity about what's happening, what our experience with fear is. And this expands into wider and wider circles in the world, how we are in the world. The confidence that we gain from having working with fear and then no longer fearing the fear starts to leak out in different areas of our life in so many different ways. And maybe we can also be inspired by how the Buddha, he worked with fear. Some of you know, and part of the stories, he talked about how he had fear before he was awakened. I think I talked about this in a Dharma talk a number of months ago. And he said when he felt fear, he just kept practicing until the fear went away. And then after awakening, the Buddha is not somebody who is afraid. He speaks with confidence, and he speaks about, he's confident in his knowledge. He knows, he has seen and knows, and he wants to share it with others. So it's possible to go from somebody who experiences fear to having some confidence. We might also think of the nuns from ancient India and their liberation poems that are captured in the Terigata. Some of you are familiar with this. And these nuns, they express themselves with warmth and calmness and with confidence, even though they also, in some of their poems, are describing some really difficult emotions and some fear. But they found their way to some confidence and more freedom. So then this poem continues, building on this. "Who will you be?" he shouted. So fear is shouting to the protagonist. "Who will you be?" he shouted from the half-open window. I took a deep breath, not knowing how to answer. "Good," fear said, as if uncertainty were a gift. "And who," fear said, as the bus peeled away, "who are you now? Who are you really?" "Good," fear said, as if uncertainty were a gift. So, pointing to that working with fear helps us not only to gain confidence where things are uncertain and that maybe to trust the practice in some of those experiences, but also to recognize that uncertainty, that is to be open to what's actually happening, to have some flexibility, some fluidity with how things are. And with how we are. One of the key Buddhist teachings, of course, is that there isn't a solid, stable, permanent self. Instead, actually, there's uncertainty. There's impermanence. Things are changing. There's the uncomfortableness that goes with that, but there isn't a soul itself. And I talked earlier about this vicious cycle of fear and clinging and identification. That some way, identification, we could say, is a way in which we're creating a self. I'm the one who has this experience, or I'm the one that has to get rid of this experience. So we can just notice how fear and clinging, identification, it may be like a sense of self that feels really tight and a really separate from everybody else. They go together. So if we can relax our fear, we can relax our separateness, the sense of separateness. And being fearless can be a profound gift to the people around us. The willingness to have the difficult conversations, the willingness to be with people who are dying or really sick, or the willingness to not know the answer, to have uncertainty, and instead of being dogmatic or having really strong views that we have to trumpet everywhere, say loudly, but just to instead have some openness, some uncertainty, and have some fearlessness that allows us to just be with what is. So fear as a vehicle. Working with fear can be just a really great way that can complement a meditation practice and might help support us discovering more and more things about ourselves, and can bring these beautiful fruits not only to our lives, but to those around us as our fearlessness grows. So when you find yourself on this school bus careening around with fear, maybe you might notice there's other people on the bus with you, and maybe that diminishes some of your fear. Or maybe the fear just asks, or he dropped her off after she said, "What if I lose everything?" And he said, "Yeah, what if you do?" And she said, "Well, who will I be when everything changes?" And fear said, "Yeah, who will you be?" And that's what brought this bus to a stop. So working with fear. May you find some of the benefits and fruits of working with fear. Thank you.